Welcome to the Mad Tech Podcast from ExchangeWire, bringing you the latest news and views from the world of ad tech, media, and marketing.
Hello, and welcome to the Mad Tech Podcast. I'm Gráinne Reid, ExchangeWire's Head of Marketing and your host for today. And I am delighted to be joined by Lindsay Rowntree, ExchangeWire's COO, who has thankfully returned from what feels like it's been 5 years of maternity leave. And we're delighted to have you back, Lindsay.
Aw, what a lovely welcome. Thank you. It's great to be back. I'm not one to get stoppy, as you all well know. But actually the kind of the return, not just from ExchangeWire, but also from the industry, it's just been really nice and supportive. And kind of you sort of forget, like, it's obviously tough coming back as a parent when you've kind of been off for a long time. And it's just really nice to kind of have everyone be so happy to see you.
Well, we're very happy to have you back. And I'm sure listeners will be very happy to hear you're back too. Alongside Lindsay this week, we also have John Still, ExchangeWire's Head of Content. John, how are you?
I am also absolutely delighted that Lindsay's back. And yeah, like you said, gee, I'm fairly sure our audience are going to be. They're going to get some nuanced critiques of the industry now rather than me and Matt ranting weekly about the issues of the day.
Oh, I don't know. Have you just found out it's being videoed as well? I'm not delighted. So we'll see how this goes.
But yes, apart from that, yeah, delighted Lindsay's here. And I am very well in a post-ATS London haze still.
Yeah, aren't we all? And then we also have got ExchangeWire's research lead, Matt Broughton. And as bittersweet as this is having Lindsay back, it's also going to be Matt's last guesting on the podcast as Matt is taking on new adventures and moving as far away from us as possible to the other side of the world, to Australia. So Matt, very happy to have you here today, but also obviously very sad that it's going to be your last podcast.
Yeah, delighted to be here. And listeners, apologies, you'll no longer get one half of mine and John's old Muppet Men rantings. But yeah, it's bittersweet. But yes, I've hopefully saved some ranting for the end.
Yeah, well, yeah, get ready. This week, we're going to discuss news of Google being fined by the European Commission and sued by PubMatic. And then we're going to dive into all things ATS and MadTech money. And we'll have a bit of a debrief where we'll unpack the insights and the standout moments, as well as some after party shenanigans too. So let's kick off. News surrounding Google just keeps on coming. Following the remedies of Google's antitrust search case in the US being revealed last week, the European Commission announced it would be fining the tech giant €2.95 billion, which is the equivalent of £2.5 billion, over its abusive practices in ad tech. The European Commission's press release stated that it had ordered Google to bring its self-preferencing practices to an end and to implement measures to cease its inherent conflicts of interest across the ad tech supply chain. It has given Google 60 days to inform the Commission about how it intends to comply with these requirements. Now, this week, ad tech company PubMatic has sued Google over its digital advertising monopoly. The lawsuit has been filed in federal court in Virginia. PubMatic is seeking billions of dollars over its claims that Google illegally monopolized the sector. The lawsuit is the second to be brought forward by an advertising exchange. So, do we think that the EU will finally bring more justice to the advertising ecosystem in the European region? Lindsay, why not? Let's kick it off with you answering this first.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind, isn't it? Throw me under the freaking bus.
Yeah.
Even when you're on maternity leave, kind of the news of Google, it's impossible for it to pass you by. It inserts itself into your life in every way possible. I think that the EU fine, I mean, obviously there's a lot of furore. Like there's a lot of angry people in ad tech right now that are fuming that the EC didn't take the chance to break Google up. This was their one chance to do it and they haven't done it. They've imposed a fine again. And, you know, so far Google's has something along the lines of €9 billion in fines. It's done nothing to stave off their competitive nature. I think what's interesting is there's a lot of, when you look at kind of opinions across our industry, there's a lot of emotion attached to it because obviously everyone's sort of very angry with Google and the way Google operates and has been for a number of years. And, you know, with PubMatic and also OpenX suing them. There's a lot of anger from the companies that have been trying to compete against them, unfairly compete against them for so many, you know, so many years or into the decades. I was reading an analysis from the legal side of things, which they look at things more pragmatically and they can kind of take the emotion out of it. And looking at sort of the reasons behind why the EC would have imposed a fine rather than gone for a breakup, gone for divestiture of the ad tech business. And I think one of the first points that she noted was that the fines that have been laid upon them in the shop in Google Shopping and on the Android side of things, they were ancillary to Google. This is the first time a fine of this magnitude has been leveled upon Google to the core of their revenue, which is their ad business. The other point that was noted, of course, is that this fine will be soaked up within 2 weeks of advertising revenue. So it's completely immaterial to them. It means nothing. But divestiture is a nuclear option. And the EC have threatened that if they do not comply within, I think it's 60 days, then divestiture is what's being threatened against them. So that's still an option and still a very, very viable option. But it was never going to be the EC's first choice. They're always going to kind of try and do kind of what they would, like, I guess, refer to as kind of appropriate means. And for them, they want to see if a fine does its job in helping reduce competitive anti-competitive behavior. And if it doesn't, they will then keep threatening divestiture. I think the concerns are that they'll do one fine, which will just be kind of like, you know, cost of doing business, as a lot of people have said, kind of assuming that this is an open goal for the EC. What will they do next? Will they just level another fine and another fine? At what point will they then go, okay, the fining isn't working, let's now break Google up? And of course, there's a lot of angry people. But I mean, this is all part of like a global sort of coming together, isn't it? Like, this is with one fine from the EC, there's fines from kind of lots of the DOJ investigation in the US. And that's what's helped PubMatic and OpenX be able to kind of bring their lawsuits against Google in Virginia courts. And I think that's going to be very interesting, because that could actually end up being, it could end up being billions and billions of dollars in reparations because of the number of years this has gone on for. So that's going to be very interesting. And hopefully the mounting pressure from all sides of the world will have to force Google to do something. But Google will obviously, as we all know, Google have got very, very deep pockets, so they can keep fighting this for as long as they need to until legally they're forced to divest. But let's not forget that even if they are forced to divest by whichever regulatory body makes them do it, there will be years of litigation. It won't be, they'll be told to divest in September and then by November they will be broken apart. They will appeal it constantly. So it could still take years and years before anything actually happens. So it all feels like very messy. It's extremely messy. And I'm just, coming back into this, kind of going, well, what's happened over the past 7 months of me being absent? Everything's changed, but nothing's changed. And that's very much what I think is going to happen over the next 7 months.
Yeah, absolutely. Just more and more lawsuits that you've had to catch up on.
Exactly. Lots of reading to do.
Yeah. John, anything else to add to this? Obviously, as Lindsay mentioned, like the fine that's been put on them will be 2 weeks. It will be, 2 weeks is nothing to them in terms of ad revenue. Do you think that the fines need to be increased for that to be more noticeable to them?
I mean, how much will ever be noticeable for them? If 3 billion is 2 weeks of ad revenue, then, like, you know, you're going to have to find them 3 years worth of ad revenue for it to even make any remote damage to them. And it still won't. Like, it's, you know, as we've said, cost of doing business for Google is in the billions. It's table stakes for them to have these kind of fines. I have no real hope anymore in any legal case against Google. I think someone said it best after Judge Mehta decided not to do anything to them in the US, that even when they lose, they win. Google are that big. That's the situation we're in now. And they've obviously, you know, the EC have given them this $3 billion fine, and then old fella in the White House is straight on his platform saying that these tariffs against US ingenuity is unmanageable and unfair, and he'll be striking out with tariffs, which, you know, it's his favorite sword to swing, is tariffs here, tariffs there. He's threatening to batter the EU, and I'd love it for them to stand up and say, okay, fine, do your worst. We are going to divest Google here. But no, it just feels like they'll pay the fine. They'll make some sort of nod towards the anti-competitive behavior and move on from that one. I've got far more faith in the pragmatic, you know, can open house cases in a private court than I do in what the EC and the DOJ are doing. I think that could have some, you know, at least that's the industry trying to take a chunk back of what they had taken from them by Google in this behavior. But no, we do, like Lindsay said, we do this again and again. Everything changes and nothing changes. But I hope there's more in the PubMatic and OpenX cases than there are in the wider earth-changing court cases.
Amas, what do you think we can expect from the lawsuit being brought forward by PubMatic?
So I completely agree to John and Lindsay's points there in terms of the fine being a complete and utter rounding error and 3 billion euros. The EU, in terms of the fining structure they can do, they can charge up to 30% of total damages over however long, you know, the monopoly or errors took place. And obviously 3 billion doesn't come anything close to that. The remedies Lindsay touched upon in terms of how Google can end self-preferencing within its ad tech stack, that's a bit more interesting. And to me, that seems a little bit of the EU's waiting and seeing what the DOJ case will come out with. But obviously, we've talked on the podcast in the last few weeks and months about how Google is moving a lot of its ad buying towards its PMax AI black box solutions. So maybe it's moving it out of that tech stack already to adapt for those potential changes. But to John's point, I think the most useful snippet in, you know, the announcement of the ruling came at the bottom of the press release. And that's what any person or company affected by anti-competitive behavior described in this case may bring the matter before the courts of the member states and seek damages. The case law confirms that in cases before national courts, a commission decision, which is what this is, constitutes binding proof that the behavior took place and was illegal. Now, that is as green light as any green light could be for companies like PubMatic, OpenX, any European publisher, any European media buyer. This is your green light to sue the fuck out of Google and get those damages back. Because as John said, the court cases aren't going to do that. So yeah, to your question, G, I think that's where the PubMatic case could be more useful. And yeah, I think every affected platform should do the same.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, isn't it? Like PubMatic and OpenX wouldn't do this if the senior leadership didn't believe that there was a solid opportunity for them to actually get something back from this. Like, it's a massive, massive thing to go against Google and take them to court. And, you know, reading quotes from Rajiv Goel, he was saying that every single time we tried to innovate, we thought we were innovating and we'd actually kind of see some kind of reward from it. But each time we didn't. And it's because each time we did, Google kept stacking a deck in their favor. And so they've been battling this for years and thinking, what am I doing wrong? What am I doing wrong? Oh, actually, I'm not doing anything wrong. It's what's Google doing wrong? And I think that this could represent opportunity for many others, as you say, Matt, to kind of come alongside them. And kind of, they are starting a wave that I think could really kind of become tidal fairly quickly. But I mean, it comes to something, doesn't it, when the EC leveled this fine against Google and Trump then says it's discriminatory against American businesses and American innovation. When a fine of that magnitude into the billions is described as just a cost of doing business and can be subsumed by their revenue within a space of 2 weeks. And one of the other things I read was one of the highest payers of corporation tax in the UK in the past financial year was OnlyFans. So, like, what's going on in the world? I just don't know anymore. And I want to leave it, I think.
Oh, dear. Yeah, well, it just sounds like it's going to have a bit of a domino effect with OpenX, now PubMatic. John, what impact do you think that this is going to have on the ad tech landscape?
I can only echo what Lindsay and Matt have said. I think if the powers that be won't wield sufficient force here against Google, and it seems like they haven't a mind to, like, 3 billion is a huge fine, but not when it comes to a company the size of Google and what they can do. I hope that green light that was given by the report for private sanctions against them and private court cases is taken in both hands. I hope there is a tidal wave of suits. I hope everyone uses it as an opportunity to get theirs, basically, for the ad tech landscape. It'd be good to see the camaraderie in the industry who've been, the goalposts have been changed frequently by Google. They've changed it. They've marked their own homework. They've done an awful lot of things that are anti-competitive here. And this ruling, if all it does is open the gates for companies getting their small piece of the pie back from Google, then that's at least that's some good to have come from it.
So do you think then we could actually see an end to Google's global reign soon? Soon probably being in the next couple of years, but do you think it's possible? No.
But I think what's important to also consider is, obviously, we're at a bit of an inflection point in the industry at the moment. Obviously, we've heard all about the consolidation of the supply chain, democratization of creative through AI, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's important to remember that there is still a hell of a lot of opportunity there for independent players. Yes, Google's reign may not end, but there's still so much opportunity. And I think, you know, it's still important to maintain a healthy dialogue with regulators, with industry bodies, with governments, to make sure that, you know, in this new, the next wave of advertising and the next wave of, you know, how the internet fundamentally works, that we're still on top of that. And, you know, we can avoid the worst of those monopolization effects, you know, making sure there's copyright protections for publishers with obviously generative AI, making sure those platforms are regulated, and likes of Google, Microsoft, Amazon, you know, the big players in this current age aren't just able to be like, oh, well, we've got so many billions of dollars in the bank, let's just buy or fund OpenAI and retain our monopoly. So yeah, maintaining dialogue, but yeah, still maintain a reasonably positive outlook.
Yeah, I think that, you know, Google, rather than being divested, which I don't think will happen anytime soon, certainly, I think them being hit where it, I'm using air quotes here, hurts them the most, because it won't really hurt them in their advertising revenue, will make them think about diversifying where revenue comes from, and it not just being kind of their main source of revenue, which is what it is, kind of obviously search being a huge part of that as well. And that's where it was hit badly with the DOJ ruling. But it will make them look at other areas. And I wonder what role AI will play in it, kind of them building out AI products and going really heavily after Gemini and looking at the impact of that can have from that perspective. But I think that there's... it will hopefully level, allow more opportunity for other players to be a little bit more competitive, but it's just not going to have so much of an impact. I mean, Alphabet's stock price didn't even move. It barely moved. You announced a $3 billion fine and their stock price doesn't even move. Like, what does that tell you about the impact that it's having on Alphabet and on Google? It's having no impact at all. So, but will they kind of go, okay, this is going to keep happening, so let's look at other ways of trying to make our business work for us.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely going to be one to be watching for the next little while. And if there are any other cases being loaded on them too. But yeah, okay. Let's leave that story there for now and move on to discussing ATS London and MadTech Money, which happened earlier this week on Tuesday, September 9th. And this year marked a first for us, with ATS London joining forces with MadTech Money, bringing together the sharpest minds from investment, media, marketing and commerce. Despite the TfL strikes, which brought a lot of London to a standstill and still is currently, we saw a huge turnout of just over 600 people in attendance, which was phenomenal. So what were your highlights from ATS London this year? John, what about yourself?
The content was, I think, was fantastic. I know we run the event and, you know, GE worked so hard in putting this all together, but I think we had a really solid, like, just exciting lineup of content across the panels. The discussions were great. It was wonderful to have MadTech Money involved as well to cover off that side, the business side of the industry. My favorite thing's always the industry coming together. It's so lovely to, you know, there was adversity this year. Like, the tube strike could have been a massive problem and it barely affected our numbers, and people turned up in their droves. There was discussion going on in WhatsApp groups about who's getting an Uber, who's getting a Lime bike, who's, you know, got a canoe or whatever. People, you know, really wanting to be there come what may, and people walking across London. I know, Ranga from Billups walked 8 kilometers in the morning just to come down, just to get there. There was a lot of really good feeling. There's always a nice feeling around ATS events, but this one in particular, people were really, like, the networking area was buzzing all day. It was so good for the industry to come together. Personal highlight was Sean Odenai obviously throwing me completely off my game at the start of my panel during his introduction to himself, announcing that he needed a toilet break. Thanks, Sean. That was me gone for most of the panel. But no, I very much loved the panels I had on TV and on the creator economy. Some really wonderful guests, and yeah, all around just a proper buzz about it. And delighted to have been involved as always.
Well, I'm glad Sean made it to the end of the panel without having an accident. that would have been a first. Lindsay, what about you? Because obviously it's been a year since you've been at ATS London, but you did miss ATS Singapore early in the year. So yeah, what did you think of ATS London being back, and what were your highlights?
I mean, I thought it was incredible. And I've been saying to you guys all this week, like, I've not been involved in any of the setup of this. So normally I'm heavily involved in kind of getting everything ready with you guys, not being part of that, and just running at the last minute and kind of going, oh, yes, the event's done. Was fascinating to see it all come together kind of from the outside looking in. And what an incredible event. I mean, I loved it. I thought it was great. I always love ATS. And I think that this in particular, there felt like there was a lot of camaraderie. There's a lot going on in the industry, there's a lot going on in London. We're trying to actually get to the damn place in the first place. And just kind of just seeing people sort of going, oh, I'm coming to this station. Anyone fancy joining me for a natter if we walked to the venue, like all that kind of stuff, kind of we were coming together. And I had a couple of comments from people saying that this is the friendliest event in the industry. Especially someone saying that being on stage here feels really friendly. And like some people find the ATS stage quite daunting, because it's full of ad tech people and they're like, oh God, I'm not techie, I don't know what I'm talking about. And then when they go on stage, they're like, actually everyone's so nice and everyone is really, really friendly, and I feel very welcomed and I feel very understood, and I feel kind of, it's just really great place to be. So that I feel like is a really nice thing to be part of. And I love that about ATS. And the fact that, as you said, Jim, you've got 600 people, over 600 people like in the room, which is incredible given that there was a strike trying to bring London to its knees, that everyone made an extra special effort to attend, which we hugely appreciate. And I hope that they felt the effort was worth it, because, you know, we had to make an effort to kind of try and get there as well. It wasn't easy for us either, trying to get to the venue in the morning. I feel like it was worth it. I think certain highlights for me, like obviously, because the problem with when you work with Strange Wire is you're often moderating, so you can't see every bit of content because they're all in different rooms and whatever else. But certainly the panels I moderated, I really enjoyed all of them. And I think the starting panel I had with Sebastian Moseman from Azerion, where the headline was, ad tech is futile, basically the lines of AI is going to kind of destroy everything, I think got a few people in the audience nervous about what he's going to come out with. But it was really interesting perspective, and a lot of people in the room agreed with him that, you know, AI is going to change everything. And AI became a sort of a running theme throughout the day. There was a specific panel on AI that Rachel moderated as well that has some interesting insights from a lot of people that I thought was a great platform for kind of explaining where they're currently using AI in their businesses. But I thought what Sebastian said about the fact that sort of programmatic and the ad tech layer as we know it won't exist in 5 years, and we have to kind of really understand as people that work in the industry, we have to really look at kind of what that means for us and how we continue to operate, both as personal people that are working in the industry, kind of what our jobs look like, but also kind of how our businesses are structured. And I thought there were some really interesting insights there. And I also really enjoyed the had quite a few good omnichannel discussions that, you know, understanding what true omnichannel actually is and means, and what those channels look like and how we can better get people talking. I felt there's a lot of conversation around socialization and socializing and coming together of different departments that aren't really talking, and how that applies from a planning perspective, how that applies from a great conversation about the marketed data stack and first party data activation, which is limited. And a big reason for that is a lot of the teams and agencies don't understand what data their brand partners have and how they can actually make use of them, how they can access them. It's often because the marketing teams within brands don't know where they are themselves or don't realize what they can do with that data. And so there's a massive need to come together of different departments, have conversations, understand how one can help the other. And that felt like a theme going on through the day. Like we're in a period of massive flux. AI is driving a lot of that. And it is a time where we need to really come together. And that, I think, came across quite prevalently on the stage a lot throughout the day.
Yeah, no, that's, I felt the same too. And Matt, I'm sure you're kind of going to echo exactly what Lindsay has said, but how do you think the industry is feeling right now from the sessions and conversations that you had? Do you think there's optimism there, or is there a little bit of erring on the side of caution?
I think it's a bit of both, really. I think, obviously, you know, everyone recognises that there is so much fluctuation, so much change going on in the industry, but equally the range of solutions people are trying and experimenting with to adapt to that change, I think more than, you know, many previous years of ATS, I think that's coming to the front more than ever. And yeah, to echo John and Lindsay, it was just so great to have so many people turn up. That would be a proper power move to turn up to ATS in a canoe. But yeah, it just shows how much people in the industry are wanting to meet, wanting to chat, wanting to debate and discuss all these changes. And it's not, you know, in previous years, maybe people that are think like, oh, I don't really want to discuss what we're doing because I don't want people necessarily to know how we're adapting to these changes. Whereas I think if everyone's being more open and, you know, more willing to debate and discuss, I think can only be a good thing for the industry. And yeah, to echo, you know, both John and Lindsay in terms of, you know, favorite highlights, favorite moments. I think the presentation from Azerion was excellent, as I think anything would be featuring fake stories about Pavlovian monkeys. There was a bit of, you know, delightful shade throwing on the Andrew Casale panel there, fireside. Which, yeah, I think can always go down well. We always like a bit of polite.
I enjoyed that very much. That was good.
Yeah, and similarly on John's CTV panel at the end, I did enjoy Pippa and Sean having a good natured debate around the definition of YouTube and how it's used. So yeah, a bit of polite shade throwing.
Who won the debate?
Ooh, I think I'd put it down as a draw.
Okay.
Yeah. It's an ongoing theme. So I had Pippa and Sean were on my TV panel last year as well. So this was round two, and they're such a good combo because they will dig at each other and they will disagree, and it ends up, yeah, we have a really good discussion. So we've agreed that we'll head for the trilogy, the decider next year.
So Pippa's at Sean. Oh my God, Pippa's at Sky and Sean, yeah, is at IPG. So yeah. So we're still no closer to understanding what YouTube is, based on one working for a media owner and one working for an agency. Both disagree on what YouTube is.
Yeah, I mean, my opening gambit was last year we discussed if YouTube was TV or not, and that's been answered definitively over the last year. And Pippa's response was, yeah, no, it hasn't. So,
amazing.
So, yeah, it was, I honestly love those panels. And there's, it's the best thing you could ever ask for as a moderator when your guests want to really get into it. And It's easy to have people who can just nod and agree, but when there's opposing viewpoints, I think that's what we really bring to the table as well across the board. Like, we don't mind fostering that kind of debate because I think it makes for a much better time for the audience.
No, you've already
can we bring up Cheese and Hugh Grant though, please?
Yes.
Yeah.
Most important point.
I'm just still so obsessed about Hugh Grant. I don't even think I can talk about it, to be honest.
So I missed it, and I thought you were joking. So apparently Hugh Grant turned up to the ATS after party, uninvited, of course.
Yeah.
So we were outside the Westminster Arms, and he walked past, and I did a double take. I was like, oh, that looks like Hugh Grant. Oh, that is Hugh Grant. And I just said it to a few people, oh, is Hugh Grant there? And next thing, he tried to walk in, apparently. I didn't see this because there was a lot of people outside, but apparently he tried to walk in and was told he wasn't welcome as he wasn't an ATS ticket holder and wasn't signed up. It was his birthday.
Exactly.
It was on his birthday.
He'll come in and have a Guinness.
Yeah.
If you're a regular listener, Hugh, happy birthday. And sorry that it was Jack, wasn't it? It was Jack Tiny from FPC that chucked you out.
Yeah.
Jack has made his career now by being the man that turned away Hugh Grant from an after party.
I'm going to forever hold this against you, Jack. I'm sorry.
But yeah, that was, yeah, the buzz started going around. So, Hugh Grant's here. Yeah, he was here. But
very briefly, all too briefly.
And apparently, the pub said he turns up quite regularly. And it's typically when there's a private event going on. So he's told to go on his merry way. Yeah.
Just has terrible timing.
Heartbreaking.
Yeah. I know. Oh, Hugh. And Zara from the marketing team, it was because of her that we knew it was his birthday, because apparently her mom is a big fan of Hugh. So, yeah, just to top off his day, his birthday was also ruined.
I mean, there's being a big fan and there's like legitimately knowing someone's birthday. That probably pops you over the edge from fan into something else.
I was going to say, I mean, yeah, come on, Zara's mom, what's going on there?
Circled in the calendar.
Brilliant.
Yeah. And Grania, what's the cheese story? Come on.
So the cheese story, we had one of our attendees turn up at the registration desk and said, you're never going to have heard this request before and it is very, very strange. But is there any chance you would have a fridge that I can store this Gorgonzola cheese in? So, yeah, John, you were there as well. So you couldn't definitely, it was very odd. So we didn't really know how to respond to it. But yeah, this block of cheese was going to be shipped to Canada the next day. So it needed to stay refrigerated. The QE2 Centre very kindly stored it in their fridge. It was vacuum sealed. So, yeah. And he got his cheese back at the end of the day. And hopefully that block of cheese has made it to Canada and is being enjoyed with a nice baguette.
Yeah, I still have lots of questions. Say that. We'll store your cheese for you.
I have lots of questions too. But yeah,
like I have lots of questions. How on earth did it get into Canada? And oh, yeah. And I also, all I saw was him walking out at the end of the event, wielding this massive block of cheese up in the air, shouting to you, I've got the cheese. And I was like, what on earth are you talking about?
Yeah. There's always a first, but yeah.
Yes.
I don't think we're ever going to have that again.
Honestly, I loved it, just how the story, like he was there, me and Grania were just there at the desk and it was just how the story sort of just kept unfolding. Just like, can I put my cheese in the fridge? It's a Cremoso Gorgonzola and I'm sending it to Canada. So, what? this is
a wonderful story. You didn't think you'd hear at an ad tech event.
No. Yeah. I thought it was his lunch. I was like, oh, okay.
We do provide food.
It was going all the way to Canada. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But no, wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're listening, please let us know if the cheese arrives safely.
Yeah.
We're invested in the story.
And we must also, I'm assuming, discuss MadTech Money because I didn't at all, sadly, get a chance to witness any of the content, but I've heard really good things. There was great people on stage, great conversations. And, you know, from our perspective, having hosted it alongside ATS for the first time ever, because MadTech Money is about 3 years old. It's had three events so far. This has been its fourth year of MadTech Money. Yeah, I think it worked pretty well and was quite nice having kind of it come into the fold.
Yeah, absolutely. Like we had some different attendees because of the content that was on stage at MadTech Money, but there also is such an overlap because of the general interest in the investment side of advertising and marketing tech companies. So I think it was a nice fit. John, Matt, did you get to see any of the content? I know you were both on stage, so I'm not sure if you did, but what were your thoughts?
Yeah, unfortunately not, but I think it's so important to bring that investment conversation in because obviously they're looking for, you know, these emerging technologies, emerging trends within the industry. So to have the opportunity either for those investors to see what's going, you know, see and hear directly from the experts within the industry what's going on, and equally those companies that are thinking, right, we want to explore these new avenues, but need investment, need funding, need to be acquired in order to do that. I think it was, very important to bring the two together. And from what I've heard, it's gone down very nicely. So, yeah, looking forward to more of the same.
Yeah, I saw a few of the sessions, which was great. I had some time to nip up and see. It's always great to see Kevin Flood, Rich and Kieran on stage doing their FPC thing because they, you know, they know this industry so well. And there was a panel and they had Ruben from Digital Audience who was on with Kevin and Rich hosting, talking about, you know, the nature of basically debt when you have a startup business, how you go through the funding rounds, how you take on this debt and this financial obligation. And honestly, it's a different side of the industry to me. Like I'm the nuts and bolts of ad tech and the bigger picture, but the building of the companies and the infrastructure around it and how you finance the innovation. It's a great string for us to have to the ATS bow and for it to team with, because it does offer that different side of the industry. I did love one of the guests, and I can't name them, sorry, but I saw a LinkedIn post yesterday from one of the panelists who popped a picture up on LinkedIn. And it was all three panelists wearing a white shirt, blue blazer combination, and then Ciaran hosting. It's like, oh yeah, so it was the blue blazer, white shirt. That was the Mad Tech Money guys, which made me giggle quite a lot. But no, very, very worthwhile. Some really, really good content in that room as well. And I hope the partnership continues.
That's so funny. Because yeah, like the usual ad tech uniform.
Exactly, yeah.
Mad Tech Money uniform for the investor side.
Brilliant. Yeah, looking at the audience. I wonder which ones of you are here for the finance stuff rather than the ad tech stuff. Interesting.
Yeah, you could definitely spot them. Do you think there's going to be any big topics and big talking points that we're going to see develop over the coming months, and just, yeah, general areas of interest that we'll see on stage for ATS 2026, dare I even mention it?
Yeah. I think for me, probably a big one is a term that has been coined. I mean, I'm assuming it was coined by Ciaran. Okay, I've not been around to actually witness this.
I know what you're going to say.
The SSAs. Yeah. The old super signal aggregator, another three-letter acronym. But that, obviously, we had a panel on stage about that with Experian talking about the SSA. And there's a great Mad Tech sketch on exchangeworld.com that's worth looking at that explains better than I certainly can what it is and what how it fits into the industry. But I think that looking at the rise of the SSA and what that means for the different layers of the advertising ecosystem and the ad tech layer will be fascinating, because it's bringing about another flux in how media is being bought and sold, and the involvement of each different part of, you know, from the involvement of the publisher to the brand and kind of everything in between. But I think also it looks at the other thing that we've obviously talked about already is AI. And I think AI is going to bring about a lot of change in how the ad tech ecosystem works anyway. And I think the arrival of the SSA, or the like, it's a brand new thing, but naming things as a super signal aggregator, I think AI will bring about a change in kind of how that comes about and how it actually comes to fruition and becomes effective in the industry. So I think that that's going to be a big one that I'm excited to see more about, definitely.
Yeah. John, anything that you think will be an important discussion area next year?
With my absolute romantic fantasist hat on, a lovely panel on how the breakup of Google is working, practically, after the regulators do show teeth and it gets smashed to bits. More realistically, discussing how we stop Google doing the same with AI as they did with the advertising industry. I think that might be the next big question that we ask, is, you know, how to stop the monopolies on this beginning. But yeah, I think a lot about, I mean, I thought we were quite neat in that AI permeates everything and we didn't massively have one big panel to focus on it. It was just understood that it's now part of the discussion, and I like that. And it, you know, there was a couple where we avoided talking about it, but it's a theme. It is not a theme anymore. It is the now and where we are. But I'd expect us to be talking a lot more about how agentic AI has revolutionized the industry and buying, and how the industry has adapted over the last year. So yeah, I think that will be that we'll have a lot more of a firm footing on what AI has really done by this time next year.
Which, by the way, was not a common phrase 7 months ago. I had to Google it. I kept saying the word agentic. I was like, what the hell does this mean? Everyone's talking about it. I've got no idea what you're saying to me. They were mentioning it in briefing calls. And I was like, what? What is this? What agentic? Ah, gotcha. It's basically just, okay, yeah. Gotcha. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, but no, yeah, we've invented another term to shroud in mystery.
To bamboozle me.
We love another term or an acronym.
Absolutely.
Always an acronym. And Matt, what about you? You might have to just come back for ATS London next year.
Yeah, exactly. I'll fly over first class, get me there or on the canoe.
Yeah,
We've seen it proven in terms of that. But no, I think fundamentally the buying and selling of media, I think that's going to be more of a discussion next year. In terms of how that's converging between the DSP and SSP, I think that's going to be a really big change in terms of how the industry operates, and obviously is going to warrant more discussion. And then as Lindsay and John have said in terms of how AI is going to be layered on top of that. So yeah, I think the fundamental process of media buying will shift and adapt. So I think that'll probably, you know, dominate conversations next year. But yeah, hopefully Google gets a big sledgehammer taken to them, but we can only hope.
One can wish, and that would make John's life complete, I'm sure. Well, a lot of people's life complete, actually. But yeah.
Okay, everyone would have a little party.
Yeah. Bye, Google. Amazing. Yeah, well, there's still obviously so much to unpack from all of the conversations that happened on Tuesday. A lot of the content, well, all of the content was recorded, and we will be releasing those videos across ExchangeWire over the coming weeks. So yeah, if you missed anything, take a look. And yeah, I guess we'll planning for ATS London and MarTech Money 2026 will be starting imminently.
Good luck to you.
Yay.
Good luck, all of us. No, it'd be very exciting. But yeah, I think that is everything for today for the MadTech podcast. Thank you all so much for joining. Matt, so sad. You've obviously
this
been
a very strange day.
Very bittersweet. But yeah, obviously I'd like to say thank you to you guys, and obviously thank you to everyone listening to me waffle and drone over the years. And I've had such a great time meeting so many of you, and yeah, we'll obviously keep in touch from t'other side of the planet, and yeah, really looking forward to see how the industry evolves and adapts coming into next year.
Absolutely. You never know where you might pop up. You might be a guest again very soon. We'll just see how things go, but yeah, we'll miss you on the podcast.
Yeah.
And John, as always, thank you for joining. No,
thank you very much, loved it.
And Lindsay, it's been great having you back. And everyone looks forward to having you guests over the coming weeks, months, years. It's been great.
Calm down now.
Yeah. I'm obviously just so happy that you're back. It's great. Yeah. Thank you all for listening. That's been the MadTech podcast for this week. And tune in next week.
You've been listening to the MadTech podcast, brought to you by ExchangeWire.